I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. There's no one that can match me. My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We're gonna stay here all night if we have to, so let's get started.
Can I go when this starts to suck?
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
I think a lot of people have become disillusioned with the voting process in this country, especially at the federal level. Do you think your vote matters?
Oh, I absolutely think that our votes matter. Oh, absolutely. I mean,
how many different ways do people in this country have to be shown that their vote simply does not matter?
RNC Standing Rules Committee member and an unbound delegate from North Dakota told CNBC's Rebecca Quick that Republican voters do not choose their presidential nominees.
The media has created the perception that the voters will decide the nomination, and that's the conflict here. Political parties choose their nominee, not the general public.
It's very clear that if it goes to a contested election, it could walk out, and anyone could be the actual candidate who is nominated by the party, not necessarily the front runner or even the second place.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, people are under the misconception that it's the results of the caucus and the results of the primary that determines who becomes the nominee. In actuality, it's the delegates at the national convention.
Hillary Clinton lost to Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire by 22 percentage points, the biggest victory in a contested Democratic primary there since John F. Kennedy. But it looks as though Clinton and Sanders are leaving the Granite State with the same number of delegates because Clinton has the support of New Hampshire's superdelegates, these party insiders. What do you tell voters who are new to the process, who says, this makes them feel like it's all rigged?
Well, let me just make sure that I can clarify exactly what was available during the primaries in Iowa and in New Hampshire. The unpledged delegates are a separate category. The only thing available on the ballot in a primary and a caucus is the pledged delegates, those that are tied to the candidate that they are pledged to support, and they receive a proportional number of delegates going into our convention. Unpledged delegates exist really to make sure that party leaders and elected officials don't have to be in a position where they are running against grassroots activists. We are,
as a Democratic Party, really highlight and emphasize inclusiveness and diversity at our convention, and so we want to give every opportunity to grassroots activists and diverse, committed Democrats to be able to participate, attend, and be a delegate at the convention.
I'm not sure that answer would satisfy an anxious young voter, but let's move on.
Parties pick the winners of elections before they even happen. It's a process called gerrymandering.
If they're allowed to redraw the lines however they want, they can still win. And this happens every election year in America.
Sounds like cheating.
Oh, that's exactly what it is. In 2012, Pennsylvania Republicans lost the popular vote, but they still won 72% of the seats in their state by drawing weird-looking districts like this. And Maryland Democrats did the exact same thing when they drew this grotesquely unfair district.
What happened in Waldo County, Maine? In Waldo County is a town called Belfast, Maine. Local newspaper there talked to the guy who ran the Republican caucus in the town of Belfast. But when he called the state Republican Party to report how Belfast had voted, the state Republican Party told him over the phone, oh, actually, they already had those numbers. The Belfast chairman said they showed Romney winning in Belfast. Really? But I'm the guy who's calling you to report what those numbers are. Mitt Romney really had to win Maine. And the Republican Party in Maine this weekend said that he did. I don't think he did.
There's just a lot of confusion. They said, well, let's have a recount. They said, well, we can't have a recount. They just write these numbers down on pieces of paper and we throw them away afterwards. So it's that kind of stuff that makes you suspicious.
And your testimony is under oath.
Yes, sir.
And the testimony you've given is true.
Yes, sir.
If you had been asked, you or others with your professional expertise had been asked to design a protective program that would protect the Ohio elections from against such software to fix the election, could you have done so?
If we've been asked to make a program that could fix the election, sure, anybody can do it. If we've been asked to make a program that could fix the election, sure, anybody can do it.
Given the availability of such vote rigging software and the testimony that has been given under oath of substantial statistical anomalies and gross differences between exit polling data and the actual tabulated results, do you have an opinion whether or not the Ohio presidential election, was hacked?
Yes, I would say it was.
Certainly on the federal level, I think it's really important that people vote. I mean, that's what part of what makes our country our country.
I would agree. I think our vote absolutely matters. I think that people on the federal level, when you're talking about a presidential election, people in this country don't necessarily understand that the popular vote is not what elects a president, that the Electoral College is what elects a president, and they don't really understand how that dynamics works. So do I feel that my vote matters and I'm making a statement? Absolutely. Do I feel that my vote can ultimately change the outcome of a presidential election based on Electoral College? No, I don't.
Do you think that your vote in the federal elections matters?
Does it matter? I really think it does. I think they already have their answer to everything already, so, you know.
Now it's just being rubbed in your face.
Smoke from the Lucy drip, hold it like a crucifix. Blow from the nose, I'm a dragon to a gnome. Got an average of being excellent, the median just dope. Like the ratio of heroin, the laxative is sold. Authorities are spoken, a man of the pure devotion. Get magnetized to the ground while the Falcons of murder closing. I chose to go guano, yano, kind of bat-ish. The bright lights of you are stalking me automatic. A teabag of piranha tank, heart barely beating, a wild one. I swim like the wreck the after he's eating. We're holding a toaster up. And it's plugged with a fork in it. Cause death by electrocution's like life in New York, in it. Should've been a dentist. Mom said it pains the way that my craft expresses. Born in a little shop of horrors that I can't even afford to rent it. Where's the exit? Wanna talk shop, I can chop it up with Exacto Touch. What's the rush? Autograph skin flash. Tag them on. I don't bragging up, you they back those suck. Hey. I ain't new to the alpha ductal milieu. Kinda like, oh, is you. I'm a little black spot on the sound of lies, and I'm not too high to say I'm the truth. I line the booth to cast blood like a pavement. Nathan sake, but I'll make some playpen. True runner bitch, make the name stick. Not for sale, but I'm taking payment. Black, steel.
I'm fly as a Pegasus, there's no embellishment. I'm here to paint the whole game with the accelerant. Good, this a good marijuana, that be my medicine. And I'm a mixture of MJG and the government.
A revolutionary banging on my adversaries. And I love Dr. King, but violence might be necessary. Cause when you live on MLK and it gets very scary, you might have to pull your AK, send one to the cemetery. We overworked, underpaid, and we underprivileged. They love us.
Why?
Because we feed the village. You really made it or just became a prisoner of privilege? You willing to share that information that you've been given? Like, who really run this? Like, who really run that man that say he run this? Who really run that man that say he run this? Run this? Like, who really fun this? Like, who really fun? Who say he fun this? Like, who in the world gonna tell Dustin Earl who to put on the You Can't Come list? Now, don't be sitting. Who also don't believe me if I got a billy? If I got a billy and a bitch recording me, I'm like, who cares? But I wouldn't be on TV, stuttering, talking scared. So the question is, when Dunn's at home, that trade ass bitch alone? Who's that voice on the side of the phone that shakes and rattles his bone? Could it be the man behind the man behind the man behind the throne?
Go!
good old days, you had people like Hulk Hogan and avowed enemy Andre the Giant. The media blitz that built up the event subtly forced those willing to participate in the circus to emotionally connect, engage, and pick a side. At that point, unbeknownst to the public who took the bait, this smoke and mirrors advertising campaign was merely a ploy to manipulate a gullible throng of participants into genuinely believing that their man was better than the other. I mean, believe it or not, as fake as this whole thing obviously was, people took this very, very seriously. And if you ever went to an event like this, you know exactly what I mean. It was then and is now downright creepy how people fall for this. Weeks before the show, the two foes would engage in trash talk against their opponent. Organizers and promoters kept the main event on the forefront of everyone's mind in order to engage as many people as possible. On the night of the show, as the enemies entered the ring, the crowd was so worked up, there was no possible way to reason with them. Their minds were made up, their thoughts were set, and the lines were drawn. It made each individual in that crowd feel good that they had actually chosen a side. And behold, the powerful art of target marketing the masses. A magical phenomenon indeed. Now, whether willfully unaware, truly suckered, or just playing the game because that's what everybody was doing, each person in the crowd made a choice. They bought into the rhetoric, validated the power of the marketing campaign, and bought a ticket. They chose a side. But no matter who the people ever chose, the real winners were the creators of the event. And those who profited, Hulk, Andre, and their slick handlers and promoters, walked away with hefty sums of cash for their trouble and their superior marketing techniques. The only people in the crowd that actually walked away ahead of the game, well, they were actually never part of the crowd in the first place. Those people had better, more productive things to do with their time. They had a real life to live. And besides, they knew all that WWE stuff was fake anyway. Now, at the end of each match, no one ever won, even though a winner was declared. It was all a smoothly choreographed event where the winner was determined beforehand. It was all a show. Because you see, Hulk and Andre were close friends who had practiced for untold hours, days, and weeks behind the scenes and away from public view, so that when it was showtime, they could more easily fool onlookers into believing the whole charade was real. And you gotta know where I'm going with this. Because there's another match that gives the appearance of authenticity, but it's as fake as anything you've ever seen coming out of the WWE and events like WrestleMania.
Politics in America today is identical to pro wrestling. And what I mean by that is, in front of the cameras and the public, we all hate each other. I'm going to kick my opponent's butt. I'm going to whale him from here to high water and beat the crap out of him. Yet behind the scenes, we all are friends going out to dinner.
Went to dinner together.
And it's all a work.
Show business.
It's show biz. And that's what you have today in politics. The Democrats and Republicans aren't really opposed to each other.
Left and right mean nothing. The only thing that counts is, are you working for Wall Street or are you trying to defend the people against the financiers?
The promoters behind the scenes of this particular event stack the deck with all their puppets. The people in the crowd are led to believe that they're the ones calling the shots by choosing the puppet that best represents their needs and interests. The candidates are whittled down by the promoters of what could be billed as the greatest show on earth. Two pre-selected choices from the two controlling parties. Did you get that? They, the promoters of the show, give you their two candidates to choose from. And since both puppets rest firmly in the back pocket of the power brokers, your choice is really no choice at all. But people will still die convinced that they have the power to affect change in the political realm, and they don't. In order to promote the event, slogans are made. Quick memes that work their way into the minds of the masses who internalize the political fodder, which subliminally causes them to make decisions. Slogans like Stronger Together, I Like Ike, Hope and Change, Forward, A Future to Believe In, Feel the Burn, or Make America Great Again, emblazon themselves on the collective minds of the unthinking, unquestioning masses. And the people who follow these politicians actually regurgitate these slogans. These candidates trash talk their opponents and dig up things on the other guy that'll give them the edge, and deceive the masses into believing that these two are really against one another. And even though it's proven time and time again that these enemies are really friends who support each other, the cognitive dissonance of the crowd bars them from even sniffing the smelling salts of reality. The crowd is mesmerized. They fall for the bait, hook, line, and sinker every single time. Even in the face of truckloads of dissenting, ironclad information. In fact, it's come to the point where the promoters of the event have pushed the envelope so far that they don't even need to bait the hook anymore. People just gravitate like a magnet toward that pointy object dangling in the water with the full view of the fishermen on the other end of the string, and they suck down the hook anyway. And like the fake wrestling match, the winner, who's selected by the promoters, becomes the supposed leader of the free world. Only he or she won't really be the leader, because the true leaders stay in power no matter which puppet they parade around in public. So are you still participating in the game set up by this nation's plantation owners? Do you legitimize the system that corners you into choosing the lesser of two evils each and every year? Do you really want somebody ruling over you, setting policies in place and telling you what to do? Do you realize that by voting, you're saying that you want such a ruler bossing others around, even those who didn't vote for your candidate? So in essence, you are supporting, by your vote, the initiation of force on people who just want to be left alone. The initiation of force on innocent people is antithetical to true individual liberty and is therefore immoral. How about this year we stop perpetuating the chains of our own oppression and live as free men and women? After all, free men have no need and no desire to choose a slave master. The voting booth is indeed the slave suggestion box.
1, 2, 3, 4.
This is Bird's Eye. There was always parts of birds in our ice cream, such as a little bird's eye. Vividly, I ate a bird's eye. Stephanie, where's the bird's eye? Wait, here's a little wing. Help me. It's crunchy. Why is that? Don't wanna touch it. Oh, look, a beak. Guess everything's here.
I call this Brown Bikini. We lived our white lie in a red cage that's now gone. Anger, rust, and the summer ice I couldn't melt in a brown bikini.
It's time to take a question from one of the members of our audience.
Yes, Lady Clinton. What does your friend know about the poop in a basket left
behind
for the...
Ma'am, this question is over.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Trump, your next poem.
This is Mike the Merry Cricket. Mike just loved to sing, and when he was little, the bees and the toucan would always stop by. Until one horrible day, there's cricket meat in the gravy, yes there was. And what it was Mike the Merry Cricket.
We stay too fast for the wicked cadavers, the ones who are dead and yet live. Look, there's a face of a skeleton in the sand where a person once died, just because zombies.
We have a question now from this man.
Yes. Mr. Trump, why is it that in front of all the people, you're kind of nasty?
Excuse me. I don't need the people. I want me, personally. Forget all the people.
See, that's nasty.
Don't talk.
Oh, sorry about little Miss Sunshine, sir. He's afraid of brownness. Can't forget about that. I'm sorry, sir. I shouldn't have said brownness. You know, I'm not proud of that. Can I get you a coffee or a nice donut? Boy, it's just too much. It's just lovely to meet you and just want to... I love you, buddy. Mm-hmm. Mr. Trump has a poem next.
It was not good in my garden that year. It was not good in my garden. I am not brave. I am a merchant. My trade was bad for me, but for my family and for my fearful son Drake, it sure looked like bravery. But it was not good in my garden that year. It was not good in my garden.
Response, Secretary Clinton.
All right. Okay, kids. This is newish. It's called Stealthily Bobby, and it goes like this. Stealthily, Bobby licked the mirror in high school. The janitor went, hi-ho, wee-wee, come and dance for us. On the sea of hope, you're sure to float. like a boat. Come home and smell our candle scent, wee wee. Come and dance for us. You can meet Lou. He's a great dude and a surfer.
Okay, let's have another question from the audience.
Let's see. My card says, wait, this is empty. I'm a butthead, so I'm just gonna wing it. My Becky is so blonde, she forgot to make her bed once. My Becky is so blonde, she first tried to make out with a bird. But that doesn't... My Becky is so blonde, she froze our tomato plant once.
Hey, stop talking soon or the witch will come get you.
Oh, dang.
No, don't worry. Look, I don't want any champagne. I don't like juice that's aged. Instead, I want a big chocolate milk. And I think eventually the world will see that chocolate milk is the chocolatiest thing out on the planet that you can drink.
Oh my gosh, that's a bunch of flies. It's like so many.
Yeah, it's freaking me out.
Does she not know they're there?
I don't know.
Martha, don't ruin this, okay? The shepherd abandons the sheep. Then he puts away his wife's old shoe, and he drives his big gold car. Marcy was a problem. Like Twyla, Debbie, and Lola. And before he can love you, you have to shut the lip.
Sounds like suicide.
Jumped out of the second floor of a record store with a treacherous four cassette and a cassette recorder in Ecuador with Edward Norton. Witnessed the metamorphosis of a legend growing like an expert swordsman from the Hessian War, and hence the origin of the Headless Horseman. Born with the endorphins of a pathetic orphan. Endless source and reservoir of extension cords and dresser drawers and deadbolts on the bedroom doors and sexual torture kits kept in a separate storage bin. Excellent boyfriend. Use intercourse to settle scores with women who have vendettas towards men. Dickhead is forced in. to the shredded foreskin. Red is torn and it only being fed a portion. Bed sores and sortions. Pregnant whores can get abortions. Fetish four sticking metal forks in. Self-absorption. Skeletor, I went to hell and fell a floor. A predator, I'm headed for competitors. Better warn them what I lack intact in a set of morals I make up for in metaphors like a cosmetic store. Stegosaurus, Chuck Norris with a thesaurus. Yes, of course, a mess of warrants. You want some, come and get some, boys. I'm giving Daniel Penaglio a refresher course on excessive force and pressure points, and dressing George Zimmerman in a fluorescent orange dress and 4-inch heels to address the court with a bullseye on his back. His whole chest and torso are left on the doorsteps of Trayvon's dad as a present form. In my present form, I'm Desert Storm. Appetite for destruction is no suppressant for aggressive, forceful, and less remorseful in every morsel. Unpleasant, horrible, hello, gorgeous. The rebel with devil horns just fell off the yellow short bus. Met a contortionist, said when you wanna get sexual. She said however I fit in your schedule, I'm flexible. Expired tags on the Saturn got Catherine Bach in the back and Daisy Dukes with the hazards on. At a traffic stop, getting harassed, signing autograph of this asshole cop's daughter laughed cause I called her a brat on it. He spat on it and brought it back, looking half in shock. Had a heart attack and dropped dead, started falling back with it and got slapped with a Colin Kaepernick practice sock. One ball and half a dick, Apple Watch. Cracked front axle, walked in a Vast Pro Shop with David Hasselhoff, pulled Tabasco sauce out of my satchel, knocked over a fisherman's tackle box and... asked if they had a laughing stock. That was rough, stupid. You got it twisted. All cause I offered this bitch a doggy biscuit. You call me misogynistic. Bitch, get to massaging this dick. Like spas in this bitch. Slob on it with gobs of lipstick. Got a shopping list for you to run some odds and ends with. It's not a bitch on this earth I can be monogamous with. She's non-existent. Robin thick with a throbbing dick on some swabbing slick shit. But I shout derogatives at bitches like fucking missile launchers, misfit blonde and nitwit, like I've gone ballistic with a frosting tip kit. Screamed I hate blondes and became one. I'm optimistic. Love to starch ish. Shoving Clark Kent's undergarments in the glove compartment of the bucket, bumping Bubba Sparks. I'm double parking up at Target's. Trouble cause a double crosser. Shadiest motherfucker you'll ever come across. A Olympic gymnast, been known for some assaults. A couple lawsuits, enough to cause a stomach ulcer. Same damn brain scan results as Rain Man's is. Something's awful when Dustin Hoffman's dressing up in your mummy costume on stage dancing the brain damage. What's the problem? Nothing's wrong. The name brand is back to reclaim status. Run the faucet, I'ma dunk a bunch of Trump supporters underwater. Snuck up on them in Ray-Bans in a gray van with a spray tan. It's a wrap like an ace bandage. Don't give a fuck, persona. To my last DNA strand, E&J in the waistband at the VMAs with the stagehand. She wants kielbasa. Prearrange an escape plan. 3-inch blade on point like a CNC. Consider me a dangerous man, but you should be afraid of this dang candidate. You say Trump don't kiss ass like a puppet, cause he runs his campaign with his own cash for the funding, and that's what you wanted? A loose cannon who's blunt with his hand on a button who doesn't have to answer to no one? Great idea. If I was president, getting office, the first order of business once I get in office. Second thing that'll make me happy's walking up to Uncle Sam, naked, laughing, dick cupped in hand, screaming, fuck safe sex, throw a latex and an AIDS test at him, tell Congress I run this land, and I want the rubber band, and make it snappy. Addiction to friction and static, addict who can't escape the habit, continue to chase the dragon, but as fate would have it, I walked up in Major Magic's, dressed as the maintenance man in a laser tag vest and a racing jacket, with a gauge to blast it and sped away in the station wagon. Stacey Dash's and Casey Anthony's crazy asses in the back seat throwing stay free pads at me. Dead passenger in the passenger seat. Unfasten the safety latches and slam on the brakes in traffic so hard I snap the relocation brackets for the monster tires. Finna get a murder case and catch it like you threw it at me encased in plastic. And send Dylan Roof through the windshield of the bins until he spins like a pinwheel and begins filling like a windmiller with a thin bill while his skin's peeling and skids till he hits a cement pillar. Swing for the fence like Prince Phil to knock it into the Upper Peninsula. You wanna go against Zilla, the rap god? When will I quit? Never been realer, the instiller of fear, not even a scintilla of doubt whose pen's iller than Prince and a chinchilla of Ben Stiller in a suspense thriller, revenge killer of Ben syllable, binge filler, syringe till I draw first blood. Even pop this on my pop ish, and it's popular.
couldn't be more up with her. Cause your innocence, I robbed you of. It's my fingers that got stuck up. Tortured her, not give her. Slapstick, hockey puck. The broad hunter with the sawed off like an arm when it's lopped off of you. But I'm not gonna get the shock on the clock. I'm a op for the ox. Cause I'm into objects that are sharp when I shop. And it's not a shock, I'm such an obnoxious mick of the rock huts and the rockers. Who would have thought this much of a cocksucker to go across the buttocks of Vivica Fox with a box cutter? That was for 50. Little slap on the wrist, be warned, I'm unraveling quickly. My squabbles, I'm grappling with your time traveling with me. Try and follow as I wobble, relapse into history with a flask of the whiskey. Tip it back, then I'm twisting wine bottles. Like what happened to Chris Reeve's spine column. That's the plan of attack when I'm fixing my problems. Wish my chest wasn't having to get these rhymes off them, but the fact that I have so many rappers against me mind boggles. And why I haven't come back on these ass who diss me's more of a spectacular mystery than an Agatha Christie crime novel. But my patience is wearing thin. Swear I've been contemplating rubbing ish in your face till I smear it in. Dish you in every lyric until you fear the pen and never appear again if you actually had the careers to end. But then I think of Molly Kiram and I steer him in that direction and forget my ideas for them. Molly, I'm gone off you. Man, light some kush. You're my first take, I'll nail you. Can't lie, I gush. If I won you over, you would be the grand prize. I'm entranced by your looks. Come and give the shady franchise a push. You can get it in a can like some Anheuser-Busch. Jeans too small, least three pant sizes. Tush mushed against your damn sides. Your puss and thighs are squished. What kind of attire's that? I'm ready to be rode. Psychopath, bet your wheel, get it popping like a flat. Light the match to ignite the wrath. Got knives to slash and slice hermaphrodites in halves. Piper Chapman's might just have to picket me like a scab. Hard to describe, in fact. Startling, violent, perhaps, are things that come to mind as soon as I start spitting rhymes like that. And you aren't really surprised at that. But as far as these lines I rap and these bars, wouldn't dial it back if I star 69 the track. Why am I such a dick?
Weasel Pot Pie. Dig a little ditch and hold the phones. Weasel Pot Pie. Fill it all in with butterfly bones. Weasel Pot Pie. Scribble on days and dribble on drones. Weasel Pot Pie. And pick your teeth with the butterfly bones.
It's great to be here with 1,000 wonderful people, or as I call it, a small, intimate dinner with some friends. Or as Hillary calls it, her largest crowd of the season. This is corny stuff. What's great about the Al Smith dinner is that even in the rough and tumble world of a really, really hard-fought campaign, in fact, I don't know if you know Hillary, but last night they said that was the most vicious debate in the history of politics, presidential debate, the most vicious. And I don't know, are we supposed to be proud of that or are we supposed to be unhappy? But they did say that, and I'm trying to think back to Lincoln. I don't think they can really compete with that. But the candidates have some lighthearted moments together, which is true. I have no doubt that Hillary is going to laugh quite a bit tonight, sometimes even at an appropriate moment. And even tonight, with all of the heated back and forth between my opponent and me at the debate last night, we have proven that we can actually be civil to each other. In fact, just before taking the dais, Hillary accidentally bumped into me, and she very civilly said, "Pardon me." And I very politely replied, Let me talk to you about that after I get into office. I'd like to address an important religious matter, the issue of going to confession, or as Hillary calls it, the 4th of July weekend with FBI Director Comey. Now, I'm told Hillary went to confession before tonight's event, but the priest was having a hard time when he asked her about her sins, and she said she couldn't remember 39 times. Nah. Hillary is so corrupt. She got kicked off the Watergate Commission. How corrupt you have to be to get kicked off the Watergate Commission? Pretty corrupt. Hillary is and has been in politics since the 70s. What's her pitch? The economy is busted. The government's corrupt. Washington is failing. Vote for me. I've been working on these problems for 30 years. I can fix it, she says. I wasn't really sure if Hillary was going to be here tonight, because I guess you didn't send her invitation by email. Or maybe you did, and she just found out about it through the wonder of WikiLeaks. We've learned so much from WikiLeaks. For example, Hillary believes that it's vital to deceive the people by having one public policy and a totally different policy in private. That's okay. I don't know who they're angry at, Hillary. You're right. For example, here she is tonight in public pretending not to hate Catholics. Now, if some of you haven't noticed, Hillary isn't laughing as much as the rest of us. That's because she knows the jokes. And all of the jokes were given to her in advance of the dinner by Donna Brazile. Everyone knows, of course, Hillary's belief that it takes a village, which only makes sense, after all, in places like Haiti, where she's taken a number of them. Thank you. I don't know, and I don't want this evening without saying something nice about my opponent. Hillary's been in Washington a long time. She knows a lot about how government works. And according to her sworn testimony, Hillary has forgotten more things than most of us will ever, ever know. That I can tell you. We're having some fun here tonight, and that's good.
Oh, my, once again with your
How dare you? How dare you?
I get a feeling it's going to be a riot.
I don't read the newspapers because they all have ugly print.
You're going to have to ask yourself a couple of questions by the end of the program. Why would our schools leave all of this history out? I mean, this is some of the greatest American story that you've ever heard. Why would they do that? And it's everywhere. You just don't know where to look. If you take a look at the revolutionary paintings of revolutionary times, here it is. This is the Boston Tea Party. Bunch of white guys, and these people strangely looking like Indians, and they're not. But that's it. Not a lot of racial diversity. If you watch movies, one a great, great movie. This is John Adams. You watch John Adams, and you don't see a lot of racial diversity. I'm currently watching Johnny Tremaine. This is I love this movie. I remember this growing up. I was watching it with my kids just last night, and I noticed there are a couple of American Indians, but you don't see any African Americans unless they're slaves. They will show people as slaves, but that's it. Now, I want to show you a painting of the Battle of Bunker Hill. Here's the Battle of Bunker Hill. Bunch of white guys, right? Unless you know where to look. Right here. That's Peter Salem. He was actually the hero of the battle. It doesn't look like he's a hero there. He looks like he's cowering behind the white guy with a sword. He was the hero of the battle. And he saved scores of American lives that day. Why don't we know this? Look here. African American helping row the boat across. You know what his name was? Prince Whipple. He fought alongside Washington during the Revolution. Take a look at this one. This painting of, this is the Marquis de Lafayette. He, if you look at this, you just think, oh yeah, and then he made his slave dress up like I don't know what. But that's what you would think, right? This guy is incredibly important. This guy may have won the Revolutionary War. James Armistead was his name. How did he win the Revolutionary War? Double spy. I'm going to let David tell the story here in a minute, but basically the Brits thought that he was spying for them, but he was spying for General Washington. He'd give the Brits bad intel and reveal the good critical information to General Washington. Did you know this story? Why? I'm so tired of people saying, well, it was just the white people, white people, white people. No, no. Why are we intentionally leaving others out? There are black founders in history. If I asked the audience, when did America have its first African-American judge? What year would you say? Anybody, take a guess. Judge. 1860s? Anybody? 1770. Amy, is that just a wild guess?
No, not. I wasn't sure exactly, but I think it's about.
1770. Tell me.
1768. Wentworth Cheswell, New Hampshire, elected to office in New Hampshire. He was reelected for the next 49 years, held 8 different political positions. Really cool story about him is we all know that Paul Revere made his midnight ride. We also know he wasn't the only guy riding that night. Mm-hmm. Now, the guy riding, Wentworth Cheswell, black and white, riding.
Now, how is it possible? Did you know that we had an African-American ride to say the British are coming, the British are coming? Amy did. Amy did. Anybody else besides Amy know that? Two, three. Okay, three people in the audience.
Now, the white guy with the sword is Thomas Grosvenor. So you have Thomas Grosvenor and you have Peter Salem, black and white fighting side by side. But Peter is definitely the hero that day. 1817, this painting is done, and all the way up until the 1980s, we knew that that was Peter Salem, the hero of Bunker Hill. 1980s, the professors got together and said, oh no, that's not Peter Salem. We think that that's Grosvenor's slave is who that is. It's not Peter Salem.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, in the 80s, they changed that from Peter Salem to Grosvenor's slave, a Saba. And that's what they say, oh no, it's not Peter, it's a Saba, Grosvenor, it's his slave. How come the guy who painted it and the guy who was there and the guy who saw it and painted what he saw had him as Peter Salem, and now we've all convinced, oh no, it's a slave.
First, one thing that I think is missing in America, and it is the key to America, has been the difference between individual rights and collective rights, and this man articulated that.
In a speech entitled Our Composite Nationality, Frederick Douglass said, I know of no rights of color superior to the rights of humanity. He thought the worst thing that could happen for blacks after the Civil War was to treat them as exceptions in the law. And so today, with the discursive logjam that we have over things like affirmative action and group rights, and the only thing that you get from government is if you ally with others who look like you or somehow are categorized like you.
This goes into your theory that this is why this is not being taught, because you can't play the victim card. If you don't...
It goes against the traditional victim narrative.
Got it.
After the Civil War, the history was actually written by the losers. That's the one time in history
where the losers wrote
the history.
That's exactly right.
Really interesting perspective.
That's exactly right.
All right, David, explain quickly. Let's go through these people.
Let's go through these. This guy right here, this is Lemuel Haynes. Lemuel Haynes is a soldier in the American Revolution. He's a black preacher. He's the first black preacher ordained in America that was a pastor of a white congregation in Vermont, Massachusetts, New York, several places.
A black professor in
black
a
preacher,
white...
That's right, in a white church.
Yeah, black minister.
Black minister in a white church in four different states. He was ordained in the Congregationalist denomination in 1785. Mm-hmm. He's the first black to receive a master's degree in America. He got that in 1804 from Middlebury College. So Lemuel Haynes, every year on Washington's birthday, he preached a special sermon about George Washington, his commander-in-chief, in all of his churches where he was.
Unbelievable.
So we don't hear about Lemuel Haynes. This is Benjamin Banneker. I think he's the most brilliant scientist in American history. This guy,
wow.
Unbelievable what he did. He's the guy
more
who,
so than Franklin?
I would put Franklin and Banneker almost equal. Now, Franklin
Holy
did
cow.
A lot of inventions. This guy one time took a pocket watch. He taught himself how to read. He taught himself science. He wrote an almanac that 10 years ahead he was able to predict to the minute solar eclipses, lunar eclipses, 10 years before they happened. I mean, by watching the motion through a telescope, unbelievable what the guy did. He once took the back off a pocket watch, saw how it worked, went home and carved a wooden clock with all the gears, mainspring, and it was accurate to within 1 minute a year. A wooden clock the
Holy
guy did.
Cow.
He's the guy who laid out Washington, D.C. He's the surveyor who did all that. He's a brilliant mathematician. Jefferson gave
never
him...
Never knew this.
No. Jefferson gave him his example to France, said, hey, you guys in France think that blacks are inferior? Here's Benjamin Banneker.
Okay, first, representatives, I asked, when did we have our first black speaker of the House? When did we have the first speaker of the House? 1789. When did we have our first black speaker of the House? I bet most people would say never.
Never. Except it was right here. Joseph Hayne Rainey. Joseph Hayne Rainey of South Carolina is first black to preside over the House of Representatives. These are the first seven blacks elected to Congress. You have here Senator Hiram Rhodes Revels, the first black U.S. Senator elected. He was a minister of the gospel. He was a missionary. He worked with Frederick Douglass. He recruited three regiments of black soldiers in the Civil War, and he was a missionary to slaves in the South. You have here Benjamin Turner, Josiah Wall, the large. This guy right here is really cool. Robert Brown Elliott is probably the most brilliant guy of that era. He actually took on the vice president of the Confederacy in a debate on the floor and just tore his head off. The racist, okay. Alexander Stevens. It was a great debate.
When did we turn? Were these guys proud Americans, or did they say
this is the epitome of what we were just talking about. These were individual guys. Half of these guys taught themselves to read. Half of these guys were slaves, and 5 years later, they're sitting in Congress. And as slaves, it was a capital offense to learn to read. So these guys in 5 years, and I guarantee you read their speeches and records of Congress, you better have a dictionary and a thesaurus in both hands, because you won't understand the language that you... It is so brilliant what these guys did.
Were they there to say the white man is bad and the America is bad?
No. These guys were... Richard Allen, let me go back here. Richard Allen had been in slavery. Richard Allen was in slavery, and he held no bitterness at all. He says, God would not allow bitterness even in Joseph when he was in prison. Do you think God will allow it in us? He said, we can't have bitterness. He said, by the way, there were some whites who held us in slavery, but it's whites who are working for our freedom. I mean, these guys had no bitterness. They wouldn't allow it.
We sure are in a weird place in this country, aren't we? A weird, weird place.
Now, go find the others.com.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever.